Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon. And you know, Ron, I wish the listener would be able to hear what we have to say before we go on, because we are so funny.
I think we were giddy a little. We're experiencing the August giddies. Congress is within hours of leaving Congress, leaving town, getting out. And there have been some exciting developments in the final hours of this congressional session.
Well, the biggest news is that Rupert Murdoch has purchased Congress.
Yes, that was as a matter of fact, for $5 billion.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a good deal.
It seems incongruous to me.
I would say, though, that the biggest news probably was that the Senate actually passed an ethics package, which includes all kinds of things that the Senate has done over the years and now says it will never do anymore, including Mae West holds.
Mae West holds,
and also killer holds, and also rolling holds, and all those other things that senators could secretly do to kill legislation without actually exposing the fact that they were the one doing it.
So we might as well abolish the Senate and House Ethics Committees, because everything will be fine now.
Oh, I don't think there are going to be any further violations of probity. No. I think that the Mae West hold, I thought you might ask me about the Mae West.
What is the Mae West hold?
The Mae West hold is the way a senator has of signaling to the person who is sponsoring the bill that while he doesn't want to publicly oppose it, he has a problem with it and wants to confer with the sponsoring senator. So it's a way of saying, why don't you come up and see me sometime?
Why don't you come up sometime and see me? I'm home every evening.
Also, in this bill, we have a number of disclosures for lobbyists who bundle contributions to give to people, and we also have requirements that senators pay back those people who use their private jets to fly senators around the country and around the world and get a chance to confer with them while they're doing that. A number of things that, well, one thought the Senate would never do. Why is the Senate suddenly getting religion on ethics?
Well, could it be that their most senior Republican has a little ethical scrape of his own, perhaps?
Ted Stevens, yes. I would say two words for the sudden conviction in the Senate that it's time for ethics, and those two words would be Ted Stevens.
Well, I was going to say the two words would be Alaska.
Yeah, or FBI and IRS. The bad news is that the FBI is searching your home. The really bad news is they brought the IRS with them.
Well, the good news is that he has not put any money, unlike Bill Jefferson, he has not put any money in the freezer because they don't need freezers.
It's sitting outside.
No, but let's talk about what Ted Stevens is accused of.
He put the money in the house.
Let's not convict him yet. Let's talk about what actually is at stake here and what this whole thing is about. Ted Stevens, for the longest-serving Republican senator in history.
Since 1969.
68 or 60, appointed in 68 when, as you well remember, E.L. Bob Bartlett died. He was appointed by Walter Hickel.
That was that particular moment in history.
Ted Stevens has been one of the more powerful members. He was the chairman of the Appropriations Committee.
Many years.
When the Republicans were in charge.
Still the ranking member.
And now he's on Commerce. I think he's on Commerce now. But again, he's responsible for billions and billions of dollars in projects and works going to his beloved Alaska. But there's never been a hint, as far as I know, a whiff of scandal involving Ted Stevens until recently when his son, Ben Stevens, who used to be the head of the legislature in Alaska, resigned.
Subject of an investigation.
Subject of an investigation. Several people, there's an oil services executive who has pleaded guilty to bribing members of the Alaska legislature. We assume one of them is Ted Stevens' son. And now it turns out that perhaps the same executive who was pleaded guilty may have been involved in the overseeing of improvements, shall we say.
An addition to
Ted Stevens' house.
I see. Well, at any rate, what this has done is suddenly thrust one of the most prominent members of the Senate into the spotlight.
83 years old.
On the very subject the Senate was debating at this very moment. And as a result, well, we saw Ted Stevens voting on a procedural vote, critical one today, to advance this ethics package. And, of course, many other Republicans who may have had reservations about it. All the Democrats voted for it. So it appears the Senate is going to, at least in some measure, at least temporarily, try to clean up its act.
But we, you know, we have seen this before. It's just like when there's a terrible shooting, the Congress will talk about gun control and nothing ever gets done. After Keating Five, the Keating Five stuff and things like that, different House ethics investigations, the House will essentially pass something that things will change, but ultimately nothing changes. I don't think anything will change. But I think what's more important is really, if we want to focus on Ted Stevens for now, what this does to not only Ted Stevens, but Don Young, the long-serving congressman from Alaska.
The only congressman from Alaska.
He's been in there since 1973. I mean, the two of them have been there for decades, and yet, you know, the last Democrat from Alaska elected to the Senate was a guy named Mike Gravel.
Oh, whatever happened to him?
Well, no, he'll be the next president.
I understand.
No, but the thing is, I mean, this gives Democrats an opportunity that they have not had in decades.
Absolutely. You know, the last time that the Senate really talked about ethics and campaign finance and so forth with these particular kinds of issues in mind, one of the last times they did, at least, was 10 years ago, 1997, 1998, in the wake of the 1996 presidential campaign. And the Republican who had the lead role at that time was a great big guy with kind of a gruff voice who was going to head up a special committee and really get to the bottom of things. What's that?
His name was Fred Thompson. He's been talking about running for president since 1996.
Or even before.
Perhaps before. Now, okay, the news is, here it is. Fred Thompson, again, not an official candidate, has not participated in any of the debates, has not spent very little money, certainly compared to like John McCain.
Hasn't raised very much
money. And yet,
money.
Look at the national polls. He's up there. He's either number one, two, or three in almost every national poll.
On the average, he runs about 10 points behind Rudy Giuliani in the national polls.
And yet, there's something gnawing at me. Ron, it's probably Ron Elving. There's something gnawing at me about the Fred Thompson candidacy. Now, we saw this week, the campaign for the longest time has been saying that they're going to raise $5 million. And usually when any campaign says
$5 million in their first month of exploratory committee status.
In June. And you know, whenever a campaign says $5 million, they
mean they're going to raise 10.
7 to 10, exactly. And they raised $3.4 million. So the question is...
Well, that would be less than 5.
That would be less than 5.
Be one-third less than 5.
Well, I'm not good in science, but...
relatively disappointing figure.
Is the Fred Thompson campaign a figment of Fred Thompson's imagination?
Or is it a figment of Jerry Thompson's imagination?
No. Actually, Jerry Thompson is a figment of my imagination.
Let's talk a little bit about Jerry Thompson, okay, because she has become a focal point for a lot of the speculation here about Fred Thompson. You had the distinguished and senior, if you will, columnist of Washington Journalism, Robert Novak, writing this week that he didn't think Fred Thompson would be running or would even be capable of running without Jerry Thompson. Who's Jerry Thompson? Is that a household name?
She will be if I'm president. Jerry Thompson is the 40-year-old wife. I mean,
And you say 40-year-old because this is relevant in some way?
Because Fred Thompson is 65.
So you're saying that this quarter of a century age spread is in some sense or another controversial?
People are referring to it. If you read Bob Novak's column, you'll see that he was very upset about the purient issues involving Jerry Thompson.
Because she's very attractive. And because there are many pictures of her that would be considered to be hot.
Juan Williams did say on Fox News that he considered her a trophy wife.
Well, he said some considered her a trophy wife, and the New York Times had raised the issue in terms of the phrase trophy wife.
And Robert Novak went ballistic on this. He says how it's unfair, it's demeaning. Well, it certainly is demeaning, but the point is he tried to make the case that Jerry Thompson is far more of a influential figure, you know, more experienced than his previous campaign manager, somebody who has a political smarts that will help a Thompson candidacy. Fred Thompson apparently said that he was thinking of running in 1996 for president, but he didn't because he was single.
And he didn't think a single man could run for president.
Right.
I wonder sometimes if anyone other than a single man can run for president. I mean, doesn't it seem that a single man would have fewer distractions in terms of, well, currently Fred has not only a wife, but they have two small children.
Well, I think the last single man who ran for president was elected was in 1992, Bill Clinton.
There we go. So there is president.
And vice president.
And now, of course, we know Bill Clinton as the spouse of another presidential candidate. His wife, Hillary Clinton, is the front runner among the Democrats. And there's a fair amount of controversy about the way she's using Bill Clinton in her campaign.
Well, I don't know about controversy, but I think it's legitimate.
Comment, let's say.
Comment.
Look how she used him this week. She used him to get out there and get after Barack Obama on a subject that she had been arguing with Senator Obama about for about a week.
There is something about having Bill Clinton fight Hillary Clinton's battles, and Bill Clinton said absolutely he would not do that. But in fairness, she has always used Bill Clinton to remind voters that the way things were during the two Clinton terms certainly were different than the last 6-7 years of George Bush's presidency. That gets a lot of Democrats, justifiably, I think, on their feet, remembering the good old days. There are other people, of course, who have this Clinton fatigue, and I'm sure that Hillary may have it too, but given the fact that enough already. I mean, again, we're seeing the same people coming out of the woodwork that we saw from 93 to 2000 who just, you know, they played political hardball. They played it very well. And some people say enough already. But that's actually Barack Obama's theme, is that Hillary Clinton, exactly, it's time to move on.
Well, and he's also been making a theme of arguing against her foreign policy conclusions and presumptions. And we heard him contesting, for example, this issue of whether or not you should meet with the heads of rogue nations, so-called. And this week, he brought forth his own policy, if you will, on the war on terror, which included this particular observation from the senator.
If we have actionable intelligence about high-value terrorist targets and President Musharraf will not act, we will.
In this case, of course, the senator is referring to the leader of Pakistan, the country right next door to Afghanistan.
Our big ally.
Which has an alliance with the United States. We have been very close with the Pervez Musharraf regime. He is, of course, the product of a military junta, but we have been close to him. And
he hasn't supported the Taliban since 2001.
And certainly the other Democratic candidates who may have strong positions on Iraq, strong positions on the war on terror, are finding it hard to get any oxygen in this room because of the fight between Clinton and Obama, which serves, in a sense, both of their causes to narrow this entire race to a one-man, one-woman field.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, how does anybody else get attention? You know, we have debates coming up. We've had 4 or 5 debates so far. You could make a case that Richardson, Dodd, Biden, and, you know, Kucinich and Gravel have made their case, but there's really nothing to say about them because even John Edwards is trying to, you know, to break out from the pack. But if the last debate, if it was Barack versus Hillary, and it extends to fights about foreign policy, fights about experience, fights about leadership, every other candidate gets lost in the process. And I don't know how you break through it free.
I think the media also have a habit of wanting to narrow the race to just two candidates, a one-on-one, a mano, even if one of the manos is actually a woman.
Here's a trivia question. Which one of the two is the woman?
I'm going to have to punt that one into next week.
Okay.
But even in the Democratic Republican Party as well, you're going to see the media trying to narrow that from Giuliani, Romney, and Thompson, and McCain, probably just down to Giuliani and Thompson in the months ahead, unless you still believe, Ken, that Thompson is going to fade and never really make it into that, shall we say, short list.
Well, Fred Thompson, the rumor is he announces his candidacy the day after Labor Day.
That would be September 4th.
And on September 5th, there's a Republican debate.
And he would be a part of it.
That he would be a part of.
And there's a rumor that he would be a part of it.
Right. But you know, before we go that far, I know you have to go, Ron, because you know your car is double parked. But I have to tell you that I will not be in the podcast, next week's podcast.
We'll have to have a guest.
It
won't be the same.
The guests have been terrible.
But it's been very hard for any guest to break into the top two of the podcast.
Well, I thought that when you had the cleaning lady on,
the media really liked to just focus the podcast down on two people.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing, though. Could we talk for a little bit about the August 11th straw poll? Because I will not be here for that podcast. What is it? What? Why that face? We're out of time.
So I have one more line. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
That's it for this week's political podcast.
Yeah, okay. You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elbin.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week with a special guest for It's All Politics.
I have so much more I want to say.
From NPR.
Oh, God.